Let's turn our attention for a minute to the whole question of social support. And you've done a lot of research on this particular issue, the role of a caregiver, the role of friends, the role of spouses and loved ones. What have you learned?
Oh, there's a lot. I've learned a lot in this, and I think it's a really important and timely topic, especially with, you know, aging populations and more people being in caregiver and patient roles. For patients, a lot of times they'll report that they feel like a burden when they ask for help. Oh, I'm burdening my family, I'm burdening my spouse. And what we found when we talked to caregivers is that caregivers actually derive a lot of positive benefit from helping patients. It makes them feel good psychologically, it makes them feel worthwhile that they're helping someone, and that it actually stresses caregivers out more when the patient won't ask for help when they need it. And so it's really important to keep lines of communication open with your spouse or your caregiver or your loved ones about what your needs are. And just remember, if you don't express what your needs are, and then perhaps you overdo it, you know, you go out and mow the lawn or you sweep the floor, vacuum, and you end up becoming more fatigued, that can end up being more of a drain on family members than if you were just to ask for help in the first place. So
people want to help.
They do.
They just don't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
There is the worry, though, from the patient's perspective of overburdening the loved one or caregiver, that one is asking too much. What do you tell the patient with respect to that?
Well, it's really important to have a frank conversation with the caregiver and set up what the boundaries are. Like, so, you know, what is too much for a particular caregiver? Because it varies from, you know, from person to person. And so to find out what those are, and then hopefully if you have a social support network with additional friends and family members, neighbors who are willing to help out, you can distribute those tasks that are too much for a particular caregiver and have them taken care of.
There's caregiver burnout.
There is. Like, up to 50% of caregivers will say that they don't have enough time to take care of themselves. And the problem with that is if a caregiver doesn't take care of themselves, then their own health becomes compromised. And when their health becomes compromised, they can't help the patient. And so it's really important that caregivers take time for themselves every day, even if it's just 5 minutes to take a mental break, especially if it's during a period of, you know, extreme, intense exacerbation, there's a lot going on. You know, it's important for them to take some time for themselves to take care of themselves.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a disease that's going to evaporate in a few days. It's going to come and go for a period of time.
Sometimes patients and caregivers don't have a social network that they can draw upon to help them with certain tasks. And so there is a website available. It's eldercare.gov. And that is a place where you can find out about respite services. So respite services are developed specifically for caregivers, for caregiver burnout. And it's where someone can come in and take care of the patient for a couple of days, maybe up to a week, to give the caregiver a much needed break. And these services can be found, again, through a social worker, through the website, through patient care organizations. So if you're one of those caregivers that you don't have a social network that you can draw upon to help you with things, it's good to know that these services are available and they can be covered through insurance and whatnot.
Caregiver support is just as important as support of the patient. I have always had the impression that spouses or significant others have an extra burden. There are feelings of the burden of frustration, of guilt on both sides, the patient and the caregiver and the loved one. Sometimes anger. When we got married, I didn't account for this potentially occurring, that I'm going to get an autoimmune disease. How do you help that pair of the patient and the loved one, the spouse, deal with those emotions, which sometimes are right under the surface?
I think it's important for them to recognize that those feelings are normal, and that every couple that's experiencing the situation where one person has an autoimmune disease and the other doesn't, that anything like anger, depression, sadness, guilt, they're all normal. And one of the easiest ways to accept that is to join a support group. There's caregiver support groups and there's patient support groups. And a lot of people express that it's really beneficial to talk to other people to realize that they're not alone in these feelings and that they're normal. If it's something that is more intense and that it's wearing down the relationship, in that case, then counseling is often recommended, to meet with a professional counselor. And there's counselors that specialize in chronic diseases and helping couples cope through that and be able to communicate more effectively in those situations.
As a male, I will tell you that, quite frankly, a lot of times males have a much harder time with this conversation than do females. Our defenses are different. So it's important to make sure that the male part of that relationship understands that they need to have these kinds of conversations.
Right. It could be tied up in gender role. So if you have a male patient who's feeling like he's not providing for his family or that he's a disappointment, then that gets caught up in the conversations as well. But that's where it's also important to go and find other male patients and understand that the way that you're feeling is completely normal and that there's healthy ways to deal with it, and to learn from couples that are further along in the process about how they cope with it and how they prevent it from negatively affecting their relationship.